Do you ever sense that business leadership and C-suite decision-making today is exponentially more challenging than in the past? You're not wrong. You're navigating complexity that is not just different from what your predecessors faced. It's of a different order altogether. Today, we're going to explore what makes it different. As a C-suite leadership coach for 25 years, I've watched the complexity of executive leadership become increasingly pronounced, and as a historian by training, I've made a practice of looking at this development through a long-range lens. I've also followed podcasters and bloggers who address this complexity from time to time, but none of them examine it from the historical perspective that I'm sharing with you today. In the next 20 minutes, you're going to gain a framework for understanding today's leadership challenges that you will find nowhere else. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Upsize Your Leadership, the podcast devoted to enhancing your effectiveness wherever you lead, whatever your role. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Armour, President of Strategic Leadership Development International, which I founded in Dallas 25 years ago. Thanks for joining us today. Those of you who follow this program faithfully know that I've not uploaded a new episode for more than a quarter. I chose to suspend my podcast temporarily after a series of personal and family health problems put severe constraints on both my time and energy. But that's all behind us now. I'm therefore relaunching Upsize Your Leadership today with some groundbreaking themes planned for the balance of the year. We're taking up one of them today by looking at the evolution of executive leadership from a unique point of view. We're going to examine its evolving priorities over three centuries and how that evolution has layered complexity into every decision-making challenge in the C-suite. I'm eager to share this perspective with you, so stick around. I'll be back in just a moment.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
Even though leadership has been around since the dawn of human endeavor, the development of corporate structures in the early 1800s changed the leadership landscape forever. Because corporate entities are everywhere today, it's easy to forget that prior to the War of 1812, virtually no corporations existed in America. But change was in the winds. Already, the first states in the U.S. were setting up regulatory mechanisms through which corporations could be recognized as legal persons. We are now into the third century of that innovation. This gives us a vantage point from which to look at corporate leadership not from merely an organizational standpoint, but from a historical standpoint as well. We can see how it has evolved. As I've traced that evolution myself, I've come to see that we can identify a unique strategic challenge which has dominated each century of corporate history thus far. I'll outline those challenges momentarily. None of them appeared suddenly. Each one has emerged incrementally until full-blown. And together, their effect is cumulative. They have built one on top of another. Because of that cumulative effect, the demands on corporate management have mounted steadily. Little wonder that business leadership today can be so baffling and so difficult to master. So let's look at how this state of affairs evolved. And to do so, we have to step back into a business context that is absolutely foreign to what we know today. When the first corporations were formed, steam power was still in its infancy. Little of the technology was in place that would soon make steam power the workhorse of the American Industrial Revolution. As a result, business and manufacturing were almost entirely local. With transportation dependent on teams of horses, companies could only draw on raw materials that they could procure nearby. Likewise, their distribution options were geographically restricted unless they were located in a seaport or situated on a river that supported vessels under sail. Moreover, with little mechanized factory equipment, manufacturing was done entirely by hand, and since lighting was provided primarily by whale oil lamps, limited interior illumination restricted most manufacturing to daylight hours. As a consequence, companies were comparatively small. Most mills and manufacturers had fewer than 10 employees, almost none with more than 20. Commercial enterprises were even smaller. In a word, there were virtually no large businesses. Only a handful of companies operated regionally, and none had a national footprint. But that was all about to change. Steamboats were just around the corner, as were the first steam locomotives. By the time of the Civil War, steamboats had made regional operations feasible, and shortly after the Civil War, railroads tied the nation together coast to coast, joined by telegraph systems that enabled instant nationwide communication. Gradually at first, but with increasing velocity after the Civil War, visionary businesses sought out ways to capitalize on these new transportation and communication networks. Soon they were tapping raw materials and markets well beyond their historic sphere of operations. With larger markets to serve, businesses started growing in size. The first giant corporations arose, and with the advent of electric power, manufacturing was no longer limited to daylight hours. Electricity also powered factory equipment, furthering productivity. But increased mobility was a two-edged sword. While it permitted a business to penetrate other markets, it also allowed businesses elsewhere to enter its own. For the first time, business competition was no longer merely local. Thus, the overarching business challenge of the 19th century was expanding competition. The force of competition completely reshaped 19th century business in the U.S. To remain competitive, companies had to find innovations that would reduce costs. The assembly line was the most notable of those innovations. Traditionally, manufacturers built products one at a time. A worker or a small team of workers performed every task in the process. As companies developed broader markets, they expanded their workforce. Eventually, the workforce was large enough that workers could specialize. No longer were they involved in every step of manufacturing a product. They were now only responsible for a discrete portion of the process. As workers became increasingly adept at their specialization, productivity improved and manufacturing costs went down. From there, the next logical step was assembly line production, which merely sequenced the order and timing with which specialists performed their function. At every step in this evolution, the driving consideration was to stay ahead of the competition. By the end of the 19th century, every industry felt relentless competitive pressure. But if workers could be specialized, what if an entire manufacturing process were tightly specialized? What if an automobile manufacturer drew on one outside company for its headlights, another for its tires, and still another for its gearboxes? because these suppliers were specialized, they could probably manufacture their product more economically than the auto manufacturer, giving the manufacturer another competitive advantage. This innovation would transform the assembly line. No longer would workers build every component of a product. Increasingly, they simply assembled modules manufactured elsewhere. But this arrangement brought unprecedented complexity to corporate management. Heretofore, apart from sales, management focused exclusively on internal relationships. Now it had to maintain relationships with a far-flung network of vendors and suppliers, without whom the company's production came to a halt. Management had to keep all of these external relationships in good repair, and in the event that a critical point of supply was lost, redundant vendor relationships were also necessary. Meanwhile, as companies had grown, as corporate giants appeared, state and federal governments began regulating business and industry. This regulatory environment became the breeding ground for advocacy groups. They pressed incessantly for regulations and legislation that would correct what they perceived as impropriety in the world of business. Thus, in addition to relationships with vendors, suppliers, and customers, management now had relationships to maintain with regulators, political figures, influential media outlets, and the general public. Having once been able to focus almost entirely on internal relationships, management was now engrossed in external relationships too. Each of these developments added layers of unprecedented complexity to management's role. And we are yet to mention the complexity brought on by still other factors, such as the proliferation of technology, worker mobility, and dependency on foreign lines of supply. Just as the overarching business challenge of the 19th century had been expanding competition, that very competition gave rise in the 20th century to the overarching challenge of entrenched complexity. The advent of entrenched complexity did not mean that expanding competition had receded, quite the opposite. Competition continued to grow, even taking on facets that no one in the 19th century could have imagined. Online marketing did away with the previous geographic boundaries that identified where your competitors were, and the proliferation of online shopping sites brought retail into the living room. Customers no longer needed to go store to store to find the lowest price for an item. They could find it from an easy chair in 30 seconds. Moreover, transformed competition added its own complexity to management in the form of websites to maintain, automated ordering and delivery to monitor, and security breaches to prevent. We are now in a business era when competition and complexity seem to work in lockstep. For every improvement in competitive advantage, more complexity is levied on management. What's more, the 20th century's entrenched complexity itself created wholesale dependence on others for things like critical services, technical support, lines of supply, and just-in-time deliveries. That dependence, in turn, made us vulnerable to the interruption of critical operations. And the 21st century is bringing that lesson home in spades. Disruptions like the dot-com bust at the first of the century, followed by the market collapse in 2008, and a decade later, the COVID crisis, these all demonstrated how much we relied on services and products that could be snatched from our grasp without warning. Then, disruptive technologies added to our vulnerability. Cell phones changed marketing forever. As a result, once mighty industries such as Yellow Pages were reduced to irrelevance. Podcasts and streaming video services forever changed how we get our news, causing the newspaper industry to implode. Now, AI is poised to upend countless other industries. Although we are only a quarter of the way into the 21st century, it's increasingly apparent that the overarching business challenge of this century is likely to be endless disruption. Whether disruption continues unabated through the rest of the century is yet to be seen. I'm inclined to believe that it will. In any event, as we stand at the threshold of the AI revolution, there's no doubt that disruption will be in the driver's seat for the next decade and beyond. Executive leadership today must therefore contend with endless disruption sitting on top of entrenched complexity, which in turn sits on top of expanding competition. And none of these are diminishing in intensity. As we said earlier, their effect is cumulative. And given the way that they seem to gain momentum from one another, they might be better described as both cumulative and synergistic. Such is the environment in which executive leadership must now find ways to thrive. Layer by layer, threats to business survival have not only multiplied, they have become increasingly unpredictable. To weather an age of endless disruption, management will have to be more trend-savvy, more adaptive, more agile, more innovative than ever. Top-tier leaders will need the self-assurance to make expeditious, high-stake decisions even when critical data is ambiguous and industry forecasts are rife with uncertainty. This reality is already changing what companies look for in candidates for C-suite positions. Thousands of CEOs in a recent global poll ranked creativity as the attribute that they now seek most in filling C-suite positions. Expanding competition, entrenched complexity, endless disruption. Together, they add up to the most perplexing environment ever for executive leadership. If you think that corporate leadership is more difficult today than ever before, you've got every reason to believe so. All the evidence that I see points in that direction. Thanks again for joining us today. Do you agree with my assessment? If not, how would you amend it? I would love to know. Leave your thoughts in the comments section or drop me a line at mike@leaderperfect.com. And whether you choose to comment or not, do take a moment to hit the subscribe button to be assured of immediate notice when I post new episodes. And if you found this program thought-provoking, think of someone you know whom you might recommend it to. Give them a chance to rethink the complexity of their leadership role. A transcript of today's podcast is available in a PDF version at upsizeyourleadership.com/episodes. Find this episode in the date sequenced listing and click on the link to download the script. It's clearly marked. I look forward to our next visit. Until then, let me leave you with a reminder to find some way every day to upsize your leadership.